I don't know. They're going to be like, man, if he has that much across the lip, I wonder what else he's got going on.
Hey there, folks. You're listening to Orville Land. It's the podcast that knows it'll never be a weightlifter, regardless how much heart is in it. My name is Dan Barris, and I'm joined here, as always, by Lieutenant Shelley Peacock. Shelley, how are you doing?
Hello, very well, thank you, Dan.
And making his Orville Land debut, filling in for Ensign Sid Sharma, is Rear Admiral Christopher Fergans.
Rear Admiral, thank you. Yeah. Very nice to be here. I look forward to not replacing Sid Sharma very well, but doing my very best.
Indeed. So Sid has taken shore leave, and he'll be back with us in, I think, 2 weeks' time.
Yes.
Do you take shore leave in space?
It's shore leave.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's go with that.
I'll be making the rules around Orville Land. Thank you very much, young man.
Yeah. A minute and a half and we're already questioning the captain.
Yeah.
Expect the court-martial.
I look forward to it.
So, guys, we're talking about an episode here of The Orville. It's a space comedy, a workplace comedy, some may suggest. Shelley Peacock,
hello.
Can you please do us the honours? Remind us what happened this week.
The Orville crew is surprised when Dr. Claire Finn begins dating ship robot Isaac.
I gotta say, that actually sounds kind of incredible.
It sounds like he really is a machine.
Meanwhile, Gordon makes an unusual grooming suggestion to Bortus.
Yeah, he looks good, doesn't he? Rugged, authoritative.
Guys, we probably need to start with the biggest issue I think taking place in this episode. Bortus's moustache.
Outstanding.
I thought it was phenomenal. Shelley, were you a fan?
It was glorious. He's so rugged. So handsome.
It was like peak Tom Selleck.
Wow. Yep.
See, I had two people come to mind when I saw it. Selleck was obviously top of mind. You don't go past Selleck when you look at a moustache like that.
You just don't.
Much like actor Terry O'Quinn that people will know from Lost, he's got one of those great moustaches which goes right across. There's no break in the middle for your, what do they call that, like the clef?
Yeah.
Like that thing. The cleft?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Maybe.
Not sure.
The little funny thing above your lips.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It just goes straight across. It's like a single like piece of hair. It's fantastic.
It's beautiful.
Very, very impressive.
Yeah. The other person I thought of immediately, and I'm sure we will all relate to this one, is my Uncle Michael.
Yes, Mike.
Hmm.
I feel like everyone's got an uncle with a moustache like that, though. Because, or at, like, if not now, at some point in their life.
Definitely happened.
Who's your Uncle Mike?
Matthew. Had a pretty good moustache for a little while. Uncle Matthew.
Yeah.
Various portions of my family have had various forms of facial hair at different points. My dad, in fact, had quite a good moustache back in the late 70s, early 80s, I want to say.
Good time.
Shelley, question for you. How do you pronounce it?
Now I'm on the spot. Oh,
moustache. You say moustache?
Moustache.
Yeah, because Fagans over here said moustache
as
well.
Yeah, I was going to call you up on that.
What did I say?
Didn't you say moustache?
Moustache. Did I?
Is that how you said it? Something
said
didn't sound quite
moustache?
Right. Moustache.
I think it was a moustache.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is fine.
How am I meant to be saying? Educate me.
No, well, I think I go for more of a common man sort of moustache.
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 But you sort of pronounce it, I think, as it's supposed to be pronounced, which is moustache.
I'm a theatrical guy.
Yeah.
I like to give it the credence that moustache deserves. It wasn't, because that wasn't a moustache, it was a moustache.
Yeah.
There was gravity to it.
Now, Chris is new to Orville Land, but we all know you as someone who obviously treads the boards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, obviously. Yes, the boards.
We should probably explain who Chris is at this point. You join us from the on-demand team.
I do. I am the content specialist in the on-demand team, which is as vague as it sounds.
But maybe just as a very simple way of phrasing one of the many things that you and your team take care of, when people go to watch the show on SBS On Demand, and like the synopses and the fact that it's even there on SBS On Demand.
Where you find it on SBS On Demand, the fact it's there, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Myself and my team look after
all yes. The back-end information and stuff that mm-hmm. makes it happen.
Exactly. We're the cogs behind the scenes.
Yeah. If you're sitting there looking at the photo on the website going, that's a nicely chosen photo, Chris's team.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And feel free to, you know, send some feedback to feedback at SBS at ondemand.com.au.
Yeah. That's a handsome photo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Regards, Uncle Mike.
I can put that in the like episode thumbnail if you like.
Yeah.
Uncle Mike can be representative of the episode.
Let me see what I can find on Facebook.com from my most recent family events.
Great. Could be a little Easter egg for our Orville Land fans.
Now, the reason why Bortus has a moustache is because it had been suggested to him from Gordon that it was going to be something which would enhance his life. Mm-hmm. And so he went and saw the doc about getting a follicle stimulator run across him. And apparently once he does that, it would be grown within the hour. Which
very
I thought was
impressive.
Very impressive.
effective.
That's the future I want to live in.
Am I right in saying, Dan, because I've known you a little while.
Yeah, sure.
I've never seen you with any sort of facial hair.
Are you suggesting I can't?
I'm not suggesting you. Well, I am suggesting that. That's exactly what I'm suggesting. Yes.
Not even a little bit of stubble?
No, look, I can grow facial hair. My problem is that one, I think as evidenced by the fact I'm hosting a podcast about sci-fi fantasy comedy Orville, I grow too much hair on my neck than above the chin level.
Talk to me like that.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a bit of that going on.
I do, yes. Yeah.
But you're also not hosting a sci-fi based podcast with any regularity.
That's true.
And I just don't want to fall into certain preconceptions people have about neckbeards.
Yeah. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. But would you appreciate the ability to grow a perfectly formed moustache in...
Oh, look, see, I don't think I'm a moustache guy.
Okay.
Because I think that if I grow a moustache, it just gets a bit creepier than most.
Have you tried it?
I've never tried it. Well, obviously, I've, like, shaved my face and had, like, the upper lip remaining.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll see how I'm going by the end of the week.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. See if I can pull that off. I also get too much ginger in my beard as well. So.
Oh, that's okay. Lovely. It's a bit of Balayage.
It's too much Balayage.
Okay, it's your face.
Moving on, we can talk about my facial hair all day, and we will. Bortus, don't you think you'd make for a great TV weatherman with that thing?
Sportscaster, I think.
Very much
like
so.
Like, I can see him on, like, an American sports show of some kind, like the NFL Super Bowl, like, analysis show, like, telling us what sort of plays they should have, the team should have run.
Yeah, he definitely belongs to some sort of 70s-era television.
Right? I can definitely see it.
News team, assemble!
Now, what I thought was kind of fun about the episode is that it starts out with Bortus getting his moustache, and I would assume that by the end of the episode, there would be some sort of larger story with this integrated into it in a way you didn't expect from the outset.
Mm.
Instead, barely even referenced through the entire episode, he's just in backgrounds with this fine-looking moustache.
Yeah, he's behind everybody, just sitting nicely, not really being addressed by anyone. You just notice that little... moustache peeking through. Yeah. That's good.
Glorious.
And then it was gone. All too soon.
So,
way too soon.
With just a very brief conversation about saying Clyden, Bortus's mate, didn't appreciate it.
But look, it served its purpose.
It's true.
Which is that it made for a very funny sizzle reel on SBS Viceland if you're watching that during the week.
Yeah.
It's great. Anyway, the main episode, we're dealing here with a love affair that's brewing between ship Dr. Claire and the ship robot, Isaac.
Mm.
Now, we've had hints of this previously.
We have, and I believe I've been shipping them for some time.
Mm.
All through season one, you know, when they were marooned on that hostile planet in season one. And then we've kind of felt that there's been something there for the last couple of episodes this season.
Now, Claire did reference that episode in here, and it was suggested that for season two you'd see more serialization of stories. And I think we've seen that. I don't think there's been one episode yet that hasn't reflected back on a previous season one episode.
Yeah.
Mm. Claire asks out Isaac on a date.
I would very much like to go out with you.
Out into space.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, I think we all started to wonder about the ethics of dating a robot on the ship.
Mm. Felt a little uncomfortable, to be honest. We were like, it's a bit weird.
I also wondered about the pure functionality of it all.
Yeah.
I skipped over the ethics. I went to, how does this work?
You're all about what's in a robot's pants, aren't you?
Pretty much, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. But the ethics are a serious question, yes. And it felt uncomfortable.
My concern is the rest of them is humanoid, except is all of it necessarily going to be replicating exactly what a human looks like? Or could you get down there and find it looks more like a corkscrew?
I mean, I hope not.
I mean, no one's assuming it's being used for, you know, the otherwise application.
There was quite a tender love scene in there, though, that...
Well, one would presume a corkscrew is probably not involved here.
Yeah, exactly. There were no... She seemed to come out okay.
Oh, gosh. It's going to need a parental advisory, this one.
I'm just here to lower the tone. That's all I'm here for.
Question for you all, and this is the thing that's been concerning me this season... Lamar, we've only, I think, had two key moments with him within the season, and both of them have been from other crew members coming up to him to get dating advice.
Yeah. He had more advice this episode. What was it? He needed some sharp threads for his date. That was a piece of advice.
And it's good advice.
Yeah, very good advice. And Dan was there as well to offer a suggestion. He had some neat shirts that he was willing to lend to Isaac.
And
at any time. It wasn't just for dates.
Oh, wow. Sweet emotion.
I'm personally looking forward to the episode where Lamar becomes the ship's hitch.
Yes, spin
off. As popularized with the Will Smith film.
Exactly. Mm. I think there's, yeah, a great season two, maybe episode 9 or 10 coming that I like, that they haven't written, I presume, but they definitely should. Because he gives great advice and he seems to be good at dating himself. So, you know.
Had we met that lady that he was hanging out with at the bowling alley before?
It's the first time I've noticed her.
Hmm. Well, it was early days in their relationship, apparently. So
yeah. Maybe. Well, she was an ensign on the ship, so obviously early in her career as well.
Yes, very nice. Has he dated anyone before, do we know, or has he been a bit of a bachelor on the ship?
As far as I know, no long-term relationships. I think a bit of bachelor life going on.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen the hit movie Hitch.
I have, actually.
But he is also a long-term bachelor with love life problems of his own.
Oh.
So maybe that's what's coming.
There we go. I look forward to it.
I've never seen the movie Hitch, but I always assume that it's much like the Eddie Murphy vehicle Boomerang.
I've never seen the Eddie Murphy vehicle Boomerang, so this conversation is not going to work particularly well. I'm surprised you've never seen Hitch, though.
It was a big film.
I'm not on trial here.
Yes, you are.
I was a little bit thrown with the symphony, and purely because we record these Orville Lands a couple of weeks before the episodes go to air, and we don't have all the information at hand. The Union Symphony conductor, like, do we know who he is?
No. We've carefully researched by looking at least at one photo of each of the music composers on the Orville.
Yeah, so it's not one of those guys from what we can tell.
As far as we can tell, it's not one of those people, but we'll keep you updated as information comes to hand as to the search for the composer within the episode. Composer.
Exactly. So by the time we reach Orville Land, like episode 11, we'll probably know that answer by then.
Yeah, we'll keep you abreast of any breaking news.
Strap yourselves in. We do find out some information in this episode. So Claire's favourite food is potato cakes.
Hmm. And favourite drink? Champagne.
Hmm.
Nice little pairing.
What is a potato cake?
That's the same thing as a scallop.
Oh.
Depends which state you're in Australia.
I understand that. But so potato cake has extended past Adelaide and Victoria into the US as well.
Seemingly.
Interesting. Hmm.
I thought it was kind of cool that when Isaac ends up taking a human form in order to bed Claire, the actor here is Mark Jackson, who's the actor who plays Isaac.
Yeah.
I think that's just cost cutting.
Yeah.
Cost cutting. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't want to pay a second actor to do it. And, you know, that's probably in his contract, so.
It's kind of nice, though, that he got some screen time.
I agree. It's kind of giving credence to what he's done in the season.
Now, the thing to maybe pay attention, and Mark Jackson, who I think's got a fairly limited IMDb profile, but I'm sure has done things around the place, he's a very, very thin guy, and you could see that when he was out of costume. And if you actually notice, a lot of the guys of whom are hired regularly to be in, like, these outfits on, you know, space shows, and I'm thinking particularly about Doug Jones, who you can find in Star Trek Discovery, and was also the Mer-creature in The Shape of Water.
Yes.
If you see him outside of the costume, like an incredibly rake thin guy, and you need to be because you've got to fit into those costumes. And if you've got a regular, you know, strapping young man like myself or Chris, suddenly like that costume starts looking ridiculously fat and out of shape, as opposed to ourselves, which are lithe and otherwise able to.
Muscular.
Know. Yeah, muscular. Let's go with that.
The last thing you need is more dessert.
But yeah, you need to be incredibly thin. Otherwise, like you start adding to the bulk of these characters.
Yep.
And yeah, we definitely saw that here with him out of costume.
He's a thin man.
You know, there is one upside here. He doesn't eat.
Well, how's that an upside?
The date went in a pretty interesting direction pretty quickly. Went straight to the bedroom.
It was amazing.
Yeah, no, Claire was pretty into it. She liked out of robot looking Isaac. And, you know, they're having the dinner and then she clicked her fingers and the simulator turned into the bedroom.
Well, the thing is that this is the thing that I maybe had I wouldn't say an issue with, but I thought about myself if I was in that situation. She's obviously developed a very sort of strong chemistry with Isaac. So it isn't necessarily, like, it's not necessarily a sexually driven relationship that she's looking for. I think she's looking for that companionship and there's definitely a spark that she is feeling.
Mm.
I found it a little bit strange that when he actually took on the form of a human, that was kind of like that last step that she needed to get over the line. Because even though it is essentially, for all intents and purposes, Isaac, it's also physically not Isaac. So I would have thought there'd be a little bit of strangeness there, but clearly maybe not necessarily so much for Claire.
No, she seemed pretty into it from the get-go. She saw him and she was she liked what she saw.
It was interesting how quickly it developed into like a physical attraction, though. You're right, because you presume that being another species slash a robot, that it was more of an emotional connection that she kind of first formed with him, an emotional and kind of an intellectual connection that she first formed. So, yeah, for it to develop into kind of that, A, physical attraction, first of all, because, you know, she was pretty into it.
Yeah.
And then for it to develop into a physical act was interesting.
Mm. I think maybe we sort of considered it to be much quicker because we're watching it as part of a 40-odd minute TV episode. The reality is, like, she's known him for what's possibly like a couple of years at this point in the show. It's a long-term relationship, friendship that she's maintained. So, like, that step to take it to a physical relationship is really, like, not like it's a long time coming. Well, sorry, it is a long time coming. Like, it's...
Yeah. They're basically Pam and Jim from The Office.
Pretty much.
Aww.
I see no difference.
No.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
I think I'm in love with him.
I did like when Isaac ends up breaking her heart for a short time there.
You did like that?
No, I liked when that happened because we got to see Yaphet finally make his move.
Yes.
So much in the same way as Isaac taking on human form, Isaac did the same with the far more dashing Norm MacDonald.
Oh.
Good looking bloke. Great suit too.
Yeah.
Great suit.
Excellent suit.
Textured.
What in God's name did you do?
Just a little makeover. Can I buy you a drink?
There's probably one big question that I think we've all got on the top of our mind with the way that the relationship starts unfolding with him trying to break the relationship apart.
Where did the singlet and the tidy whities come from? Because they looked pre-loved too. They were not, like, either he's somehow manifested these used underpants or has he just always had them and only, like, brings them out for, I don't know, social occasions or for when he goes to robots exercise? why does he have them? Where do they come from? Answer me.
Well, I mean, I presume they exercise, probably more jazzercise than exercise.
Yeah, I can see him in an aerobics old style number.
But they were very dirty.
They were exceptionally dirty. And so my answer would be, obviously, he got them from the replicator and said, you know, computer, I require this. But he got very specific with what he needed.
Yeah, very, like, did he specify where the stains needed to be? They were incriminating.
Now, when I talk to my lights at home, because I've got some voice-activated lights, I'll be like, Alexa, can you please turn up the lights to 75%? When he's talking to the same thing, he's like, computer, can I have some soiled, you know, undergarments? 63%.
Turn the filth to 54%. Yeah. I presume that's exactly how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad we've got to the bottom of that.
Indeed.
Unless Dan shared his undergarments. Dan? You know Dan? Not you, Dan.
I was about to say, he's not in the show.
Oh, I thought you were. I was just saying.
Shelley likes what Shelley likes.
Who is Dan?
You know, he's that big bulbous-headed character.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, he's great.
Sure.
His name's Dan.
Yeah, okay.
It's with a double N.
Easy mistake.
It is a bit of an Orville Land fan favourite.
Great.
Now, usually at this point in the show, we turn to Sid, who will offer us a deeper insight into something that's taking place here on the Orville. We don't have Sid this week, so we've just got dum-dums being the three of us. But we're going to try to make do.
Sorry.
But this week, because we were all taken a little bit aback by the idea of Claire dating a robot. Now, it seemed ethically a little bit dubious because... When I was looking at it, I was considering the idea of being able to give consent. And he's certainly a thinking creature, and he can offer consent because it's an independent thought that's coming from him, so that's all perfectly fine. But there seems to be something lacking in terms of his knowledge and understanding about what it is that he's really entering into, which is what got me a little bit sort of squeamish watching it. I realised, though, that maybe I was really just sort of had my own biases taking place here, and it was just something I hadn't really sort of thought through properly. Because I was thinking through, like, what other situations are similar to this. I was thinking about people of whom were maybe a bit on the spectrum. So people of whom, much like Isaac, read a lot of signals and understand where people are coming from, but maybe aren't necessarily making that emotional connection in the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about people of whom are on the spectrum like that, like, they're perfectly welcome to romantic and physical entanglements and are on a regular basis. So that's probably okay. But as our conversation was going on, we took things in a typical Orville Land pervy manner, and we stopped sort of thinking about the ethics and the moralities of what was taking place on the show. But somebody in a room mentioned a young woman falling in love with the Eiffel Tower. And so we started embracing the conversation leading towards a little thing called object sexuality.
Yes, we did.
Now, for those who are unfamiliar with this, or objectophilia, which is another term for it, this is when it's a form of sexuality, particularly focused on inanimate objects. So you may have feelings of attraction, love, and commitment to, you know, a keyboard, the Eiffel Tower.
There's several different examples. There's a few different documentaries that have been produced on the subject, some of which I believe have played on SBS at various points. But there's one currently on Netflix called Animism, I believe, that kind of details a few different relationships between people and inanimate objects. One is the Eiffel Tower.
So this is a lady named Erica Eiffel.
Yeah, yes. She's taken his name.
She took made it official.
Well, she took its name.
Its name. Yeah, it's not gendered, it's not, is it?
No.
There's another woman who is in love and has a relationship with the Statue of Liberty.
Now, the questions I obviously I've got many questions.
Sure.
But the question I'd have here is that if you're marrying these inanimate objects, like essentially don't they have some sort of level of consent as well? Like how many marriages can the Eiffel Tower take on at once?
I mean, it's a big tower. Plenty to go around.
So is it legal? Is it legally binding?
I mean, I would presume not.
No? Okay.
I mean, surely if, you know, the same gendered people have only just gotten marriage rights in a number of countries recently.
Yeah.
I also think the Eiffel Tower is worth quite a substantial amount of money too. Yeah. I think there's some wealth distribution issue. Like, did the Eiffel Tower have to sign a prenup?
I mean, I would presume so. Yeah. Because if Erica ends up dating the Eiffel and then the Eiffel's got off and engaged in relationships with a number of other people of whom have also got object sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are they then cheating on Erica?
I don't know.
And what right does she have to lay that claim?
That's a good question.
Mm.
One thing I did want to bring up with the idea of Isaac and Claire, and what seemed creepier, I think, at first, or more uncomfortable at first, with the idea of a robot or kind of a, not that it's inanimate, but, you know, not a kind of, not a human dating a human, was that we've seen it in other forms plenty of times, but I think the kind of the physical form of Isaac made it worse. So in we've seen lots of people date, like in Blade Runner 2049.
That's what I was thinking about immediately, because it looks and feels like a woman.
Exactly. Or even in her, you know, it's there's no physical form, so it's more of an emotional connection at that point, which, again, somehow seems more understandable than falling in love with a hunk of metal.
Mm. As I said before, I've been shipping them for two seasons now. I really like the idea of them getting together, but maybe when it was actually happening today in this episode, I was like, you know, it's a little awkward. I don't know.
It's part of what makes it awkward, the fact that you didn't really see everything. So obviously this is broadcast television where you can't really have, you know, it's particularly explicit scenes taking place. But if you actually got to see how the mechanics of him work, would that then become less of a, like, this squeaky sort of an idea?
Not if it's a corkscrew down there.
Well.
That's for sure.
I mean, that's an issue. But, like, as long as, you know, he's got bits that look like bits do, like, it probably would seem less weird, I would think.
I don't know if that's true. In his physical, in his, like, human form, sure, but, like, I think it's the metallic nature of it that really, that doesn't work. Shelley, were you happy with the relationship in the end? Are you looking forward to seeing it kind of grow and continue? Or was it better, or was the thought of it better than the reality of it?
Yes, the latter, I think.
What did you find not satisfying about it?
I think it was that factor. It was that kind of, it felt a little bit awkward. I don't know. It actually happening, it didn't fulfill possibly my fantasies. So, oops, where's that? Was that warning on this episode?
Is there some fan fiction that we don't know about
yeah,
here?
I'm writing it on the side.
Yeah, cool.
It's my side gig.
Do we have anything else we want to talk about here?
I've just got heaps more objects I can talk about that people are in love with.
Can we do a couple of those?
Yeah, what have you got, Chris?
There's a car. Many cars. Lots of people fall in love with cars. There's a Ferris wheel.
Okay, now is this a lady named Amy Wolf who fell in love with a fairground ride called the 1001 Nuct?
That is that. I didn't know the name of the ride, but I believe that's the same person.
Now, I believe that she actually has an interest in quite a number of inanimate objects.
Oh.
So it's not just that fairground ride, but also apparently she's in love with a church banister, a banister in her home. So that's two different types of banisters.
Yeah, right. She's got a type.
And also the Empire State Building.
know.
One of those is a lot bigger than the others.
Look, I mean, that's true. I have to say, I fell out of love with the Empire State Building when I met her in real life.
Really?
Yeah.
Wasn't for you?
No, it wasn't for me at all.
Much like Isaac and Claire, the reality didn't live up to the expectation.
It really didn't.
Look, online it seemed like it was going to work, and then there just wasn't the chemistry.
That's sad to hear. I hope you find the one soon. Mm. How was Top of the Rock?
Well, actually, I was going to say Rockefeller Plaza might be. Yeah, it's the one for me.
That was the one for you?
Yeah.
Good to know.
Mm. Like, legit.
Well, it's got the better view, doesn't it?
It does have a better view. Mm-hmm. In fact, proposed to my wife on the top of that building.
Oh, no way.
It kind of is your building then.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a very important part of, you do have a relationship with?
Yeah, somewhat.
Rockefeller Plaza.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Well, Dan, it's a special that's lovely. Place.
Rockefeller Plaza, the birthplace of television.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
many different.
Very much so.
Arguably just as important as you marrying your wife in your life.
Yeah. I mean, yes. Guys, I think this brings us to the end of another Orville Land. It's been a pleasure talking with you all.
Likewise.
Chris Fagans, it has been a stellar outing for you joining us here at the panel.
Thank you. And Sid will be back soon, I assure everyone. My stay may be short-lived.
Or it may be longer than you expect. But Chris, if people want to find you online, can they do that?
No.
Okay.
No, you can you can submit any feedback or complaints to at TheDanBarrett on Twitter.
And Instagram.
Yeah.
Shelley Peacock, you can be found via Instagram.
Yeah, sure. @_hellbells_. Again, I think I should change that. It's not very good.
Nah, you're fine. People can find me on pretty much any platform. I'm there at TheDanBarrett. If you want to talk about Orville Land, leave the hashtag Orville Land. It helps people find the show. If you're listening to the podcast, please leave a review on the website or whatever platform it is that you're accessing the podcast. The more reviews that are left there, the more that people see it as part of the algorithms, because that's how algorithms work. This has been Orville Land. My name's Dan Barrett. Very special thanks to Jeremy Wilmot, who's responsible for the audio and mixing of this podcast. Huge thanks to special guest Chris Fagans and to returning champion Shelley Peacock.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week. Same Orville Land time, same Orville Land channel. Until then.